It's Saturday, January 28th, 2006, and you're listening to the Typical PC User Podcast. Well, folks, welcome to the show tonight. I want to make sure that you have the very best show that you can, so I'm going to make my intro very, very short. I want to thank you guys for subscribing to my podcast. I've been getting some very, very good feedback. I actually got the results back from the survey that is up on my page. I've gotten about 60 respondents. They don't consider it statistically valid until you get 200. So if you have not taken the PodTrack survey, go to the main webpage at www.typicalpcuser.com. And that will be the one thing that I ask for you to do for me, because the feedback I've gotten so far is very interesting. The numbers are about what I would expect them to be, about 91% male listeners. Age bracket is anywhere from 24 to about 55. One really interesting thing was that you guys have given me some good written feedback there as to some things that I'm doing very well, and a couple of things where I could improve and get better. One of them was making these intros shorter, so I'm going to make sure that I do that in this show. We have a full show tonight. I'm going to be giving you some Windows tips and tricks based on some listener feedback. Next, we're going to be doing a John Chambers one-minute tip. I'm going to do a review of the Tom Bim laptop case and brain cell. And finally, Professor David Malin from Harvard is going to be doing a piece on malware. So enjoy the Typical PC User Podcast. All right, well, I had a listener of mine, Nalex133, write to me saying, could you do a show on how the color scheme of Windows XP gets changed? I'm sick of blue, green, and silver. What about pink, red, and gold? I thought I would go ahead and take a few moments to answer Nalex133's question and give some advice on how to change that desktop theme. So first of all, let's talk about how to configure desktop themes in Windows XP. Basically, a desktop theme is a predefined set of Windows elements that help you kind of personalize the way that you're going to do things. They basically control the font and the colors and the pictures, including the backgrounds, screensavers, icons, all of those things, mouse pointers, those are all part of the themes. Basically, to select a different theme than you have currently, just go to Start, click Control Panel, click Appearance and Themes, and then click Display. Or you can right-click an empty area of the desktop and then click Properties. That will also get you to that tab. Secondly, you click the Themes tab and then you select a new theme in the theme list. A preview of the themes will be displayed in the sample box. And if you want to pick one, then you can simply pick OK and all the elements about those themes will now become part of your new desktop. So it's easy to pick a desktop theme. You can also modify any element of a theme that you want. All right, so if you want to create your own desktop themes, all you have to do is click Start, Control Panel, Appearance and Themes, and then click Display. Now, first you're going to click the Themes tab, and then within the Themes list, click the theme that you want to modify, because it's easier to modify one than to start one from scratch, right? Now, what you want to do next is make your intended changes to the different elements of the themes that you want to make. So, for example, if you want to change the background design or the color or the position of the background, then you have to click Desktop tab in the Display Properties dialog box and make the change there. If you want to change the icons on your desktop, you click the Desktop tab in the Display Properties and make the appropriate changes there. And you continue to do that for your screensaver and for the color scheme and et cetera, et cetera. When you're finished making all of these changes, then you want to click the Themes tab again, and in the Display Properties dialog box, you click Apply. The changes that you made then will be saved as your previous theme name, or modified, basically. And then if you want, the name is displayed in the themes list now as modified, and then you can click Save As, type in a name for the actual theme name that you want, not modified, but whatever you call it, you know, your theme, and then click OK. And now your new theme will be there for you, and you can select that among all of the other themes. It's a pretty handy thing to be able to do with themes. Another handy tip is how to change your screen resolution. You know, a lot of times we want to be able to see the screen better. If you're getting older like me, you want to just be able to sometimes see the icons bigger or whatever. Or you want to make it smaller because you're doing gaming or you want to see more of the screen. Really easy to do. Open your Display and Control Panel. Go to Start Control Panel. On the Settings tab under the Screen Resolution, you just drag the slider and then click Apply. When prompted to apply the setting, just hit OK, and the screen is going to turn black for a moment, and your screen resolution will now change. You have 15 seconds from that point to click Yes to confirm it, or to click No, and then it'll go back to the way that it was. Now, the way that you can get to display, the way is you can click Start, Control Panel, and then you click the Appearance and Themes, and then click Display. Remember that a higher screen resolution is going to reduce the size of the items on your screen and increase the relative space that you have on your desktop. And you can switch, 800 by 600 pretty much is the biggest that we get these days. So hope you like that tip as well. It's an easy way to change your screen resolution. Another easy and quick tip is using a web graphic for your desktop background. This is really easy to do. With Windows XP, when you are on the web and you see a picture that you like, just simply refer to that picture, right-click on it, and you can save it as desktop background. When you do that, the desktop background will change to whatever picture you were looking at on the web. Really quick and easy tip. I'm also going to refer you on the show notes to a really easy website that Microsoft has there to customize your computer, where it teaches you how to do things like making Windows XP Professional accessible, adding colorful screensavers, working with themes, customizing your mouse pointers, customizing the start menus, and a whole bunch of very easy to follow tutorials right there from Microsoft. I'll add those to the show notes. Well, folks, I hope you've enjoyed this week's Windows tips and tricks. Those are ones that I haven't done in a while, but again, thanks to the listener who wanted me to make sure that I covered these.
Hello, this is John Chambers from the 1 Minute Tip Podcast with another installment of the Typical PC User 1 Minute Tip, a 1 minute tour of cool, helpful items found on the web. So if you're listening to the Typical PC User Podcast, you're probably familiar with news aggregators, a way of having news brought to you instead of you going out to the websites and trying to find news. But how about trying to find deals to get away from it all for a while? Let's go ahead and check out Orbit's new RSS feed and maybe plan a quick getaway. So let's point our browser to www.orbitz.com. And at the bottom of the page, you'll see the newly added orange RSS button. Go ahead and click on this button, and you'll be taken to an RSS feeds page. Here you can select top deals from Orbitz, maybe flight or hotel, maybe a vacation package. So you can select specific destination deals or just airfare deals from top cities. So all you have to do is right-click and copy this link, paste it into your news aggregator, and now you'll be automatically updated with the latest deals from Orbitz right in your news aggregator. For more helpful computer tips, check out the 1 Minute Tip Podcast at www.oneminutetip.com. This is John Chambers, and thanks for listening. And now back to Victor and the Typical PC User Podcast.
All right, folks, a couple of weeks ago, I told you that I was going to start doing reviews of products for the Typical PC User Podcast, as I have contacted several vendors to send me some product to review, whether it be hardware or software. So I wanted to do my first review of the year today. I meant to do this one last week, but with all the trouble I had with the feed, I decided to delay it. This is goes back to a product that I found back in December. I'd heard about a company called Tom Bim, B-I-H-N, that made very good backpacks and laptops and those types of things. So I went and checked out their website, and I started to look around the site and found that the site was very well made. Good marketing. It was easy to navigate through. And I also noticed that they had forums and a blog and RSS feeds. That was my first clue that we were talking about a quality company here. So I thought, these guys are pretty happening. I'm going to try to look for a laptop bag or a briefcase or something like that that I can check out and see if they will send me some product for review. So I found a bag on their site called Super Ego that looked pretty nice to me. And the price for this bag was $140. Now, before you say, wow, that's a lot of money for a laptop bag, I want you to be aware that these bags I have found are built like Fort Knox. I'm going to give you more details about the Super Ego bag that I picked in a minute, but I thought that this size bag would be good for my lifestyle, as I like to carry around not only my laptop, but a lot of papers and things like that. So the bag still needed something to put my actual laptop into, and I found that they had a great product called the Brain Cell. Now, the Brain Cell takes your laptop and basically wraps it around an 8 millimeter thick soft foam padding. The laptop, in essence, then hangs on a 4mm hard corrugated plastic insert that really protects the front and the back and the bottom of the laptop very well. The sides of the brain cell are really protected by really dense cross-linked closed cell polyethylene foam. Now, to me, that just means it's rugged, and I certainly found that out in my test. This really gives you a lot of toughness in this bag, and this part of the equation, in other words, the brain cell, which was to put your laptop in, is only $50. This is an incredible buy by itself. I went ahead and said, okay, I want to review the Super Ego and the brain cell, and I wrote to Tom Benn. I asked for the product to review, and they got back to me very quickly. Darcy was very nice, and in 5 days, early December, I had a Super Ego bag with the color of my choice, and they come in like 10 or 12 colors, a brain cell for my laptop, as well as a couple of shoulder straps and accessories. I started using the Super Ego, and I said, I want to really make sure that I use it for about 3 to 4 weeks before I review it, because I told Darcy, I'm going to give it a review in my podcast, but just because you send me one doesn't mean it'll be favorable. We'll find out. I like to always tell things, like I always say, the good, the bad, or the ugly. Well, in this case, it's all good. The Super Ego really is built to take all kinds of stress. It has a lot of room, and it fits my lifestyle very well. The first thing I noticed about the bag was that it had what appeared to be watertight zippers and pockets. Now, in the website, they call these splash-proof. Now, you know, I read that, and you always think, okay, that could be marketing. But about 10 days ago, I got to find out for myself. I spilled about 10 ounces of hot Starbucks latte right onto the bag by accident. I freaked out. I mean, right away ran into the office, got the paper towel, started wiping everything down out of the bag. And finally, when I got things clean enough to be able to, I put, cold water on them. And the spill seemed to be coming right off. It was almost like the canvas-type material was almost waterproof, like you would think about a sofa or something. But what was really neat was that when I opened up the back zipper, I noticed that it was completely dry inside. There wasn't a single drop of coffee that had gotten inside the back area where the brain cell sits. That waterproof zipper really was waterproof. Now, the front flap of the Super Ego bag itself opens up by what I call, no other way to put it, it's like a airplane seatbelt clip. It's got the same roughness, the same quality, and same button mechanism. And basically, when you open the bag, you have a bunch of really easy to reach pockets with a large pouch that spans the entire width of the bag. I can put all of my papers in there. It has pockets for organizers, like for PDAs and for pens and for an iPod and a wallet and a key snap. I also snapped my keys and my ID from work all over the outside of the bag when I needed to just real quickly snap my keys and get it out of the way. And it was really easy to do that with. So I found the getting into the bag was very convenient. You don't have to unbuckle the main flap to access the laptop because that's just the zipper that's in the back. And then that's where your brain cell sits. Now, my laptop is pretty big. It's like a 9-pounder, 17-inch HP. So using the shoulder strap, which is adjustable, and it's made of 2-inch wide nylon webbing, it's about a 1/2-inch thick foam, and it was really easy to carry this bag, even though it was heavy, no doubt about it. But the strap was very comfortable over my shoulder. The foam really made it easy for me to carry, even for long periods of time. And I've been slinging this thing around for a month, and it's been, fairly comfortable, I would say. Now, if you think I was impressed with the Super Ego bag, which I was really impressed with the brain cell. As I said, the brain cell is one very slick laptop protection solution. Basically, they build these for all sizes of laptops. They have like 8 different sizes, including the new MacBook Pros. They basically take your laptop and surround it with an 8mm thick soft foam padding so that your laptop hangs basically suspended in a 4mm hard corrugated plastic insert. This protects the front and the back and the bottom and the sides absolutely. The brain cell can be used all by itself. As a matter of fact, I did that several times. I needed to go to a meeting. I didn't want to take the Super Ego bag, so I would just slip my laptop into the brain cell and just carry that by its handle. No problem at all. The top of the brain cell opens up like with a Velcro-like flap that seals it very easily. It's not Velcro. It's actually tougher. It's called Aplix, I believe. Overall, these two products really exceeded my expectations in every way possible. Although they're not cheap, at $140 and $50, Tom Benn would be the first one to tell you they don't make things cheap, they make them right. And in this case, I have to agree. It is a deal if you go to consider that I think these bags are going to last me a long time, and Tom Benn is going to give you some very good customer service, support, and products with a lot of flexibility. Tom Bim, though, wants to up the ante a little bit, and before they even knew what kind of review I was going to give this product, they offered up a couple of bags for me to give away to all of the guys as a part of a drawing. So they're going to offer up one of their really big professional day packs called the Brain Bag, $140 value, and also one brain cell to two lucky listeners who are going to win these. The only thing you have to do is write to me at typicalpcuser@gmail.com after you visited the Tom Bim website at www.tombin.com. That's T-O-M-B-I-H-N. Go to their website, check it out. Check out their forums, check out their blog. Write back to me telling me why you want to own a Tom Bim bag. And then just send me that email. Put in the title or the subject line, Tom Bim Giveaway. That's Tom Bim Giveaway for the subject. That way I'll know the emails that are coming in. The emails must be turned in to me no later than 12 p.m. Pacific time on Thursday, February 2nd. That night when I record the show, I will pull two names for those who have sent emails, and they will be the lucky winners of these two prizes. I will announce those on my February 3rd, 2006 show. There will be only two winners, and there will be no substitutions. The winner's name and email address will be given to Tom Bim so that they can contact you directly and make arrangements for you to pick your color and your right size for your brain cell, etc. No other email addresses will be given to Tom Bim by me. So if you want to win a Tom Bim, then I'll look forward to your emails. I want to thank Darcy and the folks at Tom Bim for letting me try out their product and review it honestly, and you can be sure I did, and for offering their product to my listeners as a giveaway. I'll put a link and pictures of both bags on the show notes, as well as, of course, a link back to the Tom Bim website. Well, folks, we're lucky enough to have Professor David Malin from Harvard University Extension's E1 joining us again tonight. Tonight, the subject is malware. Professor Malin, take it away.
Hello, my name is David Malin. I'm the instructor for Computer Science E1, Understanding Computers and the Internet, at Harvard University's Extension School. And Victor's asked me to chat with you today about malware, or malicious software. So probably every one of you has heard of viruses and or worms and or spyware these days, because it's tough to turn your computer on without getting attacked by one or more of these pieces of malicious software. Well, long story short, a virus is a piece of malicious software that usually attaches itself to a file, particularly executable files, or in Windows, those ending in .exe, and they can infect your computer if usually you, the human, are tricked into clicking some attachment and opening some file, into visiting some web page and then installing some link once prompted, and generally via some interaction on your part. Worms, by contrast, are even a bit scarier insofar as they can infect your computer without you, the human, even doing anything. Worms usually infect a computer if it's connected to a network, particularly the internet, and you don't have any kind of firewall installed, or you're running an operating system, which often is the case of Windows, that has one or more security holes in it that a worm is able to take advantage of. A worm, then, is just a program that propagates itself without the assistance of humans, usually jumping from computer to computer on the internet via what are called open ports, or bugs in the software related to the maintenance or connectivity of such ports. Spyware, meanwhile, as the name implies, is often designed to spy on you. This is usually the stuff that triggers those annoying pop-ups when you visit sites. It can also log all of your keystrokes. It can also log whatever passwords you type in. Generally, spyware can do anything. And that's the scary part about it. Sometimes this information is uploaded back to some central server. Sometimes it's emailed to or uploaded to one particular guy who wrote the software and is interested in finding people's usernames and passwords. Sometimes spyware ends up infecting your computer to such an extent that it becomes a so-called zombie, which is usually the manifestations of which are that your computer begins to become an effective server for spam, and you'll be sending out dozens or hundreds of emails every day via your computer unbeknownst to you simply because you got infected by one of these forms of malware. So the important question, therefore, is how do you protect yourself, and how do you avoid getting these kinds of malware on your computer, and if you do happen to get infected, how can you remove the problem? How can you tackle it? Well, to be honest, the by far the best approach to preventing yourself from getting infected with any forms of malware such as these is honestly safe computing, if you will. Simply being vigilant when you open emails, not to, for instance, open attachments if you don't know who they're from, and really never open attachments that end in .exe. Rare is it necessary for a friend or colleague to have to mail you a .exe file. So 9 times out of 10, or 99 times out of 100, if you have received via email a .exe file, don't even double-click on it, because usually these are how viruses are spread. Even when you receive a zip file, for instance, in the world of Windows, those files, too, are quite often infected with viruses, and simply double-clicking them and opening whatever's inside can result in some kind of infection of your computer. When you visit websites and all of a sudden you're bombarded with pop-ups and they say click here to proceed, or click here to approve, click here to install ActiveX control, unless you know what you're getting and you want to obtain whatever this website is promising you, don't click any such buttons. Better yet, hit escape to try to close or background the windows. Click in the top corner of the window, the X usually, to close the window. In the world of Windows, hit Alt F4 to just force whatever foregrounded window. To close itself. Generally, don't click the yes or no options that are in these windows, because often they're designed or placed in such a way to dupe you into doing something that you do not intend. Also, certainly keep your computer up to date with the latest and greatest patches and security updates, particularly if you're a Windows user. I would, in fact, enable automatic updates. I know there are folks out there who sort of decry the immediate installation of security updates from Microsoft, but I, for one, have never run into a problem keeping my computer up to date with the latest and greatest, only because the amount of time malicious authors need these days to develop some virus or worm or attack that takes advantage of some security hole that, say, Microsoft has announced is so incredibly short that once a patch, as they're usually called, is released for some security hole in your computer, you really don't have much time to get it installed before you're likely to have that security hole exploited by some malicious author. So I would not have qualms, for instance, about installing Windows Service Pack 2 or any of the other security updates that come out from Microsoft. Certainly, updating your computer always has its risks in that there might be a bug in the latest update, but these days it's probably worth the risk, to be honest, especially if you're good about backing your data up elsewhere. But even with all these measures in place, practicing safe computing, not opening attachments that you are not comfortable with, and keeping your computer up to date with the latest software, what can you do if something does in fact slip by? Well, first of all, hopefully you are running some sort of antivirus program like McAfee Virus Scan or Norton Antivirus or Grisoff's AVG Free. Any of the popular antivirus programs out there are pretty good to run. Unfortunately, they don't always catch everything. So even with the software in place, you might in fact get infected, even if you're up to date with the latest and greatest virus definitions from these companies. So what can you do to actually remove such software? Well, particularly if you are infected with spyware, you have a few options. If you're infected with viruses or worms, hopefully the antivirus software you have on your computer, if you proceed perhaps to update it as quickly again as possible, hopefully your manufacturer has released some kind of fix for whatever problem you're experiencing. If not, perhaps go to Symantec's website, go to McAfee's website, look up the particular problem you're having, if you can, and you can express it well enough to find it, and see if maybe there are manual removal instructions on their website, which there often are. Spyware can usually be tackled by a number of products, and I'll focus the rest of our chat on these, only because folks tend to be a little less familiar with the anti-spyware products that exist out there. Fortunately, most such products are free these days, at least some of the best ones, and perhaps the best, at least in my experience, is called SpyBot, Search and Destroy, which we can provide a link to on the website. This is simply a program that not only can scan your computer for thousands of different forms of spyware and remove most, if not all of them, it can also, on an ongoing basis, monitor your computer for such spyware via its Immunize feature. This is a program, like your antivirus software, that you should run quite occasionally, updating it incredibly frequently in order to protect yourself against the latest and greatest threats. Another good one, the one I do myself use less frequently, is called AdAware. SE Personal is their free version, as I recall. This, too, works in a similar fashion to SpyBot and might be a useful alternative to consider, especially if you're having trouble removing some infection. For the more savvy among you and the true technophiles out there, one excellent little free program is actually called, somewhat misleadingly, Hijack This, which we can also provide a link for. This is a potentially dangerous tool only insofar as it allows you to edit what's called the Windows registry. And incidentally, most of our discussion thus far has been about Windows, but the fact of the matter is most threats that exist today have targeted the Windows operating system for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is its popularity among folks. But those of you or those out there who suggest switching to Macs for the sole purpose of avoiding spyware, viruses, and worms, certainly statistically that's not an unwise decision at this point, but there is nothing I would say inherent about macOS that makes it any better so far as security goes vis-a-vis Windows. It's simply been less of a target, perhaps slightly more secure in certain versions. However, it is just an operating system written by human beings who are fallible and is fundamentally similar in spirit to the design of other modern operating systems. And so as such, as macOS continues to gain market share, I would not be surprised if we continue to see additional threats for it. So back to the world of Windows, if you are particularly having trouble removing some infection from your computer, Hijack This is a wonderful tool. It allows you to edit, again, the Windows registry, which, among other things, stores not only user preferences, but also links, essentially, to software that should load on startup. And that's where spyware usually gets you, because it is hidden itself on your computer and is triggering itself to launch when your computer first starts. You may be savvy enough to know that you can go on Windows to your Start Menus, Programs folder, Startup folder, and remove anything bogus in there that you don't want loading at startup. Unfortunately, the registry can also trigger programs to load at startup. But if you have a distrusting eye and sort of a good sense of what should be on your computer and should not be on your computer, I would suggest playing around with Hijack This, because it will list line by line all of the stuff that's loaded into memory on startup and allows you to check off and remove options that you don't want running. And this is a wonderful tool for removing the most resistant of spyware and other infections that you just can't simply remove via other means. But with all of these products, particularly the anti-spyware products, your best course of action, to be honest, is to always run these programs in what's called safe mode. Update them first, as you would normally do, but then reboot your computer. And just before the Windows logo comes up, and just after your initial BIOS screen, as it's called, pops up, hit F8. I've never been good at timing exactly when you should hit F8, so I typically just hit it incessantly until you get the safe mode menu, essentially a black and white screen that allows you to select what's called safe mode for Windows, which essentially boots your computer in a very minimalist state with very little loaded, and ideally with no spyware, worms, or viruses loaded into memory. That is the best course of action, because the smartest of malware will actually, if it's already running, when you're trying to remove it, will fight your attempts to remove it and will often defeat your attempts to remove it. But safe mode usually buys you a bit of an advantage and allows you to remove the infection before it can counteract your own attack. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to chat further or point you in the direction up some more esoteric solutions to less common problems. I can be reached via email at Malan, M-A-L-A-N, at post, P-O-S-T, .harvard.edu. Again, my name is David Malan. I'm the instructor for Computer Science E1 at Harvard University's Extension School, and many thanks to Victor for having me on this afternoon.
Well, folks, that's it for tonight. I hope that you've enjoyed this 85th episode of the Typical PC User Podcast. Remember, make sure you sign up to win those Tom Bim cases. It's really easy to do. Make sure that you remember to keep subscribed to the show and to tell a couple of friends about the show, too. For now, this is Victor Cajal of the Typical PC User Podcast saying, enjoy!